So welcome to Growth Minded. I'm Ed Hayes. My life passion is to teach others how to be the best they can be, how to cultivate positive attitudes, how to create a love of learning, and how to develop a growth mindset again and again. The advantage of a growth mindset includes more comfort in taking risks, striving for goals outside of our comfort zone, greater motivation, enhanced cognitive development in different areas of your life, less stress, anxiety, and depression, better personal relationships, and higher performance levels. If you sound interested, feel free to hit that subscribe button, and welcome to the Growth Minded community. I'll let this play out for a little bit, but we got a great episode for you today. I'm going to be speaking on the defining decade in terms of work, how to leverage weak ties, how to build identity capital in terms of love. I'll explain a little bit about the cohabitation effect and then the big five personality trait. And then we'll wrap things up with the brain and the body. Dr. J speaks on the growth mindset in this book. So I'm excited to share what I learned from reading more about the growth mindset. Anytime I read about it, it reinforces my mission and my passion to speak on the growth mindset. So I was excited to see Dr. J mention this in her book. And then we'll speak on our 20s and how it's a critical period of growth. So let's get started here. So we'll take a look first at work. One interesting stat that caught my eye in reading the defining decade is that 2/3 of employment gap, basically the amount of money you make throughout your career, 2/3 of that comes within the first 10 years of work. So the first tactic we'll speak on is leveraging weak ties. So for those who are not familiar with weak ties or the concept of what weak ties are basically the people outside of our close-knit group of friends. This could be classmates that we talk to once a week. This could be someone in another department at work. This could even be your personal trainer or even your hairstylist. So Dr. J argues that weak ties are more important and they're actually more influential in our lives than our core friends. And they can be connections to your first job, your next job, your spouse, and even your kids. So we're going to speak on how to build identity capital next. So identity capital is your personal collection of education, your experiences, your resources, and even your network that you assemble over time. And this combination becomes a part of who you are. And Dr. Jay argues that to find experiences, she argues for people to find experiences that help shape your identities, take time to not only commit to things, but also take the time to reflect and explore who you are during your 20s. So for someone in college, for example, building identity capital could be how you volunteer your time outside of your day-to-day classwork, whether it's tutoring or volunteering at different clubs and organizations, coaching, mentoring. There are many ways I believe that you can build your identity capital, especially in college when the resources are basically all at your fingertips. Now with Growth Minded, that's another way I'm building my identity capital, is speaking with people outside of my immediate circle, learning from people who may be older than me or have more experience in another field and can help shape me in the different areas of my life, whether it's financial or spiritual or career driven. So that's kind of how I'm building my identity capital. So we'll switch gears here from work into love. So joining me now is Dr. Phil. No, I'm just kidding. an interesting quote on love I saw was that the most important decision any of us can make is who we marry, yet there are no courses on how to choose a spouse. There's a hypothesis that was scientifically proven, it looked like, that couples who live together before marriage and who don't make a mutual commitment to marriage first would be more at risk for later difficulties, divorces in their marriage. And Dr. J argues that there's a risk in switching costs. So the time and the money and the effort that you invest in this relationship, you're less likely to want to switch gears, even if you have a feeling that things aren't really working out the way you want them to, because you've already put so much time, money, and effort into this kind of relationship. So ways that Dr. J mentions to test the relationship and to mitigate the effect of the cohabitation is to basically test your commitment level, try a wide variety of activities to test your relationship. Does your partner like sports? Do you like sports? Do you both like to read? Do you both like to dance? Do you both like to hike? Trying to think of any other things that I like to do. Do you both like to ride bikes? So, I mean, again, I'm no Dr. Phil, but those were just a few suggestions on how to mitigate the risk of the cohabitation effect. So then from there, we'll switch gears into the big five. I've heard of this before. You may have heard of this before. This refers to the five factors that define how people react to the world. So this could be openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. So according to Dr. J, the more similar personalities between two people, the more smoother things may be. To an interesting point, I saw that neuroticism, which is defined as anxiety, stress, folks being critical or moody, it's far more predictive of relationship unhappiness than having different personalities. So again, it's like if one person is high on the neuroticism scale, then that might be a sign that that relationship may not work out, compared to, you know, someone who's introverted and then someone who's extroverted. So I thought that was interesting to me. And from there, you know, I think I've seen something called like the five love languages. I think that's interesting. It's like how you communicate what you value most, whether it's time, possessions, words of encouragement, stuff like that. I think that kind of ties into the big five personality test. And there's no perfect solution to it, but I think it's just another way of, it's another lens to look at love. So I wish you all the best on your current relationships and your next relationships. And we'll switch gears now into the final section here, the brain and the body. In terms of the growth mindset, I'm getting this right out of the defining decade. Those with a growth mindset believe people can change and success is something to be achieved. People with a growth mindset believe people can learn and grow. And for growth-minded people, even when they fail, they view it more as an opportunity for improvement and change. And I've read over the years that people with a growth mindset and a fixed mindset both see the same amount of challenges and setbacks. It's the way that they react to that stimulus. It's the way that they respond to that setback that really sets them apart in their different mindsets. To take it one step further, in this book, they had a research study on freshman college students. They were evaluated for fixed or growth mindsets. And they were followed for years. They're followed throughout their year, their college years after enrollment. So fixed mindset students saw academic setbacks as failures. They were more discouraged, while growth-minded students saw setbacks as opportunities to maybe change their strategies, change their study habits. They saw it as a way to build confidence and enthusiasm and increase determination and grit. So when the 4 years go by, the fixed-minded students are less confident, while the growth-minded students are more confident, more enthusiastic, and more determined in their endeavors after college. So I have a few examples. I think my favorite one happened recently, and I won't give a metaphor about college, but I will say, even if you're cooking, let's say you like to cook, or even if you're new to cooking, like I tried a steak for the first time. And so I go on YouTube, I try to look up how to grill a steak. And for some reason, it says put olive oil on it. I don't know what I was watching. I'm not even sure if that's what I, maybe I'm just misremembering, but that's what I did. I put a lot of olive oil on the steak and I throw it on the grill. 5 minutes go by and my uncle and I were looking at the grill and it's on fire. It's smoking. And we almost had to call the fire department. I had my hand ready to grab the fire extinguisher. Luckily, we were able to control the fire, control the flames, and no one got hurt. The grill is right by the pool, and we were ready to basically push that thing into the pool if it got too close to the gas tank. And the steak, if you're wondering, turned out to be really charred and really overdone. And that was, that's an example of a failure. Like it's not what I really wanted when I was going into it. I was looking for a medium rare steak, but that's what I got. It was my first time doing it. And, you know, a few weeks go by and I try another steak and I get a medium out of it. And then another few weeks go by and then I get a medium rare steak, something that I was looking for the first time. And it goes back to what I was saying about the difference between someone with a fixed mindset and a growth mindset is how they respond to a certain stimulus. You know, I could have said, hey, I don't think cooking's for me. Or I could have never tried steak again. But the way I responded was in a kind of growth-minded way, trying again, changing my process, my strategy, no more olive oil. And, you know, now I can make a good steak. So it wasn't your typical college metaphor, but I'm going to stick to it. And, you know, feel free to share your experiences with initial things that you saw as setbacks, but then turned into, you know, an opportunity and something good came out of it. Feel free to share that in the comments or, you know, within our group, within our growth-minded pages. So the final piece is that the 20s are a second period of critical growth between, you know, ages 1 and 7. That's one period of learning and growth where we have a lot of neurons that help us learn, create habits, and grow, basically develop our character through our habits and our neurons. And now in our 20s, we're having a second, Dr. J calls it a capstone, a last critical period where our brains are flooded with new neurons. And it's almost that, you know, it's almost that we either use it or we lose it. So that's why I wanted to end it on this note, whether, you know, now is the time to build some of those habits. Now is the time to focus all the energy that you need to set yourself up for an alley-oop that you can look back on years from now and say, hey, I'm glad I invested that time back then, because now, you know, now I could kick my feet up a little bit. Now I can enjoy the fruits of my labor. So I'll end it on that note. So we started off today's episode saying that goal setting in your 20s leads to greater purpose, mastery, and agency, well-being in your 30s. If we use our time wisely now, we can take a step back when we're older and thank our past selves for what we've done in our 20s, whether it's across work, whether it's across our relationships, and then for our brain and our body as well. So I would recommend reading The Defining Decade. Dr. J, again, is a clinical psychologist. She draws on more than a decade of work experience, working with hundreds of people within their 20s. And this was Growth Minded. I wish you all the best in terms of your defining decade. I wish you success in terms of work, love, relationships, and then growing your brain and growing your body. So this is the end of today's episode, and I'll catch up with you guys on the next edition of Growth Minded. Thank you.